Public libraries have been community centers for centuries, but they've also found themselves at the center of modern-day political controversies over censorship and public funding. The Chicago-based American Library Association, which is celebrating its 150th year, helps members navigate the choppy waters. I'm WBBM News Radio's Rob Hart. This week we sit down with Dan Montgomery, Executive Director of the American Library Association, and President Maria McCauley this week on At Issue.
We have to be very quiet when talking to the leadership of a library advocacy organization.
Well, ask Maria. She's the librarian. I'm actually not a librarian.
You can be as loud as you'd like to be.
Now, you guys are coming off of your annual conference and exhibition. It took place in Chicago. It was at McCormick Place at the end of June. 15,000 librarians and industry professionals converging on McCormick Place. Mm-hmm. And this was the 150th anniversary of the ALA. And what were some of the topics of discussion at your meeting?
Yeah. Well, I'll just start. And so first of all, like you said, the big 150 celebration, you know, 1876, we're founded in Philadelphia. And but we've been based, I want to say, the ALA has been headquartered in Chicago since 1909. But it was a big celebration. 150 years is pretty important to everybody. You know, I think in our world, our members, our librarians and library workers and the libraries themselves, you know, really truly believe that libraries are elemental to American democracy. And so it was really nice to conjoin the 150th with our 250th national birthday coming up. And then everything around that, you know, democracy, preserving people's freedoms was a lot of the discussion. And Maria, you want to chime
in? Yeah, I love that. Yeah, that was definitely a focus. And then other areas included information literacy. So how library people and librarians can help the public and students and people on campuses navigate how to do research and how to find good information sources. Another theme is digital equity, making sure that our community members have access to technology and then the learning opportunities to upskill in the area of technology. And one of the issues around that is E-rate. E-rate is under threat right now, and E-rate provides funding for 50% of America's libraries for broadband and internet access, and also supports our schools. So that's an area of advocacy that we ask the American people, if you love being able to come to your library and connect with resources to help make calls to your congresspersons to say we love our libraries and that we think it's very important to support E-rate.
Now, before we talk about just some of the issues that that the ALA is addressing, let's just talk about the role of the library in your community. Because whether it's a big city like Chicago or a suburb or a small town, Everybody seems to agree that the library is an important piece of the fabric of the community. Every library has its advocates, and some people use it as a means to get new books. A lot of kids use it as a place to get books and movies. Parents use it as a place, like a third space almost, for their kids. So let's just talk about the role of the library in 2026 America.
I love that question. Our libraries help people to thrive throughout their lives. I like to explain it that our libraries are there for people from birth through the end of life, through the whole progression, whether that's through your school library, on campus, at an academic library, or at your public libraries. Our libraries truly are the hubs of communities. They are a place where people come for social connection, for upskilling and learning and co-working. We see a lot of people who are co-working in our libraries. And it is also a place where through teaching and learning, we are strengthening our democracy through civic participation and through information literacy.
Yeah, it really is true to say it's a community hub. We have international visitors, both at the conference and every once in a while, people will come into the ALA from abroad. And one thing I've heard from other people from other countries is like, we don't, you have this interesting library culture in your nation, right? Where it is the center of a town. You can almost go back to like that, idea of the old New England town and the town square. But libraries are really that. During COVID, we saw, and it's still true today, that there are a lot of places, especially in rural America, where the place where you can get broadband connectivity is in your library. You mentioned, Rob, like school help, homework help, things like that. But if you go into a modern American library today, you'll see you can check out woodworking tools. We call it the library of things, right?
Yes.
Cooking equipment, camping gear. I mean, it's like truly endless, the things. And then you go there and you can get help. You know, often there's help for seniors doing taxes and, you know, special things like that. Recently, you know, we were talking about this with some Illinois County folks. With the changes in Medicare and things like that, and people feeling like there's some rural hospitals that have closed, telehealth is becoming a big thing in libraries where citizens can go in and maybe there's a dedicated room where they can have a private space and there's a computer and the librarian's going to help them log on and connect to the telehealth. So you're looking at, you know, healthcare through libraries now.
That's right, Dan. Yeah. And another area is helping new Americans navigate a new location. And that could be that volunteers are there to help guide people through a whole new system. It could also be that people are taking English as a second language courses or learning and studying for their citizenship exam. I like to say that you could spend your whole day at the library, almost like a choose your own adventure. Yeah. And when you think of like in Chicago with the Chicago Public Library with the 82 branches now with the new Obama Center branch, you really could just spend actually choose your own adventure many, many days, actually every day of the year, and to be able to go from morning through the evening until closure, doing all different kinds of things, both interactive as well as contemplative and quiet.
Well, it's summer, right? So there's summer reading programs going on, everybody. And hopefully...
No, my kids are enrolled in one in the Northwest suburbs.
Yes.
Love it. And one other thing, we've done this, we had some grant money to do this program at the ALA, and we're seeding money to libraries to do what they call like building bridges. And it's really having difficult community conversations. You know, there's a lot of stress out there in communities, and there's sometimes people, you know, really vigorous arguments happening at school boards or library boards or other public spaces. And so that's where we're training folks in the library to help facilitate in a peaceful, thoughtful, you know, kind of like way of bringing comedy, C-O-M-M-I-T-Y, not comedy, haha. Trying to, you know, bring people together.
Well, that could help too.
Yeah, that could help. Yes, and that doesn't hurt. No, you know, trying to, and I may have misspelled comedy, maybe it's one M, but, you know, there are community conversations, how to have tough conversations in your library. So it's like that. I think we really believe libraries bind communities together.
And on the notion of library as citizen of the community, we are in summer, and there are times when it gets incredibly hot in Chicago. And the city, when in announcing their plans, the city of Chicago, their plans for helping people who do not have air conditioning, who may need a place to keep cool for hours, it's Park District Fieldhouses. It's Chicago Public Library branches.
That's right.
And it also, as you point out, provides internet connectivity for people who don't have it. Because a lot of us with this internet connected device in our pocket, known as our phone, we take this for granted. There are a lot of people for whom the library literally is their connection with the outside world.
Yeah. That's right.
No
and
question.
We heard stories during the pandemic of people like driving up and being near their library to get that connectivity. And then that's when a lot of hotspots and laptops started circulating outside of the library to help people with access. And not only is internet access so important, but also that civic participation. So a lot of people actually go to their libraries to vote or to do early voting. Mm-hmm. We have a campaign at American Library Association called Reader Voter Ready. And the whole idea around that is to help to support making sure that people know that they if they're a citizen, that they have a right to vote and to get resources on how to go about and do that.
And you can also read up on all the issues and become educated about how you ought to vote at the library.
That's right.
You know, if you go, and I am a Chicago resident, really fortunate to live in the city with this long tradition of a really vibrant public library system, which we still have. I'm grateful for that. But all over America, you go to libraries before they open, you will see people lined up to get into libraries, you know, for all the reasons you're talking about. Computer access, not just to cool off in this really hot weather. So they're really important to American civic life and just people's everyday experience.
And one of the things that Dan and I have been talking about is that there's no other place that has the infrastructure of being able to be welcome, to go anytime that the library is open. It is a place for everyone. And we welcome everybody. Our library workers, they love seeing the whole community come in through the doors. At the Cambridge Public Library, where I am, we have people lined up to get inside. Mm. And that's really important for places where it gets cold and hot. But a place where anybody and everybody is welcome, that is what I think is truly special about our libraries, and that we so care about making sure that libraries offer these learning opportunities for people so that they can continue to flourish throughout the whole span of their lives.
You're listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart. We are talking with Maria McCauley, president of the American Library Association, and Dan Montgomery, executive director. Now, libraries have found themselves caught in the middle of the push and pull of contemporary politics, but this is also nothing new for libraries, because if I can think back many years ago to the media law classes I took in college, one thing I took away from that was the bulk of the First Amendment cases that have reached the Supreme Court are not about controversial issues. They're about what you can and cannot do with the library. There's a lot of case law that comes from what people can look at on the computer and what they're not allowed to do. And so the library, this is not a new phenomenon. The library is not only because it is a central piece of civic life, it's also been at the center of some controversies as well. So what kind of guidance does the ALA have towards its members, not only today, but also throughout history?
Sure. I'll start. Every year the ALA produces a document. We just released it maybe a month or two ago, a report on the state of America's libraries. And it looks at the past year, right? So we looked at the year 2025. There was a record number of book titles where there were attempts to ban or censor that book around the country, over, between 4,000 and 5,000. That was like five fewer than the record of 2023, I believe. Before COVID, the average annual number of those attempts was about 200 and some. Oops. Excuse me. Sorry about that.
hey, wait a second. Shh. I got to tell the librarians to be quiet.
I know. I'm sorry. So pre-COVID, a couple hundred attempts to ban books in the country. Post-COVID, we've had a few years where it's almost 5,000. And so we're at a time where this is a really fraught issue in America, right? And libraries, both public libraries and school libraries, and librarians are at the center of this. We help. And anyone interested in book banning and trying to protect against censorship and book bans can go to our website, ala.org, and find resources. But there are resources where we can get legal resources to help individual librarians and libraries themselves navigate those kinds of challenges. Librarians are skilled, trained people who know how to manage collections, to know how to recommend books that are appropriate to readers of a certain age and things like that. The vast majority of these challenges are politically or ideologically oriented, right? And that is something we don't believe in this country. We believe that there's information should be free to all. It's up to the individual to decide what they want to read or access. It's not up to governments to decide that.
Yeah, we really believe that every individual should choose for themselves and their families what they want to read and explore. And isn't it beautiful that through literature and reading that we can learn more about ourselves and also to widen the aperture of understanding humanity.
And can I add one thing to that, Rob? So if you look, I think a lot of people you sort of think that it's individuals who are doing these book challenges, right? A mom or dad says, I don't want that book in the library for my child. In fact, only about 2% of those challenges come from parents or individuals. The vast majority are from large political organizations or government actors, people in government, elected officials who want to ban books.
Now, how does this current moment, though, stack up compared to, let's say, the early 70s or maybe the 1950s or maybe even the early 80s? The story of people or organizations objecting to what's in the library, that is as old as America itself.
No question, right? And before, you know, you can go back in history. But it is cyclical. I mean, kind of the point of your question, I think, is sort of like, are there other times when it's been this bad, if you will? You really have to go back to the 50s and the McCarthy era to find something this intense, I think. There you remember there was sort of Tipper Gore and folks like that in the 80s about violence and cartoons and things like this. Some of that happened there. You know, we had to deal with real strong things when the Patriot Act was enacted about, you know, whether people wanted to track individuals' usage from libraries. And, you know, the ALA said, no, that's not a free country when people monitor what you read. But there's been in recent history in our I was born post-McCarthy. I think our lifetime, if you're born post-McCarthy, there's no precedent for the times we're in right now.
But then you talk about using the library as a community space to foster a dialogue between mm-hmm. people. Mm-hmm. And maybe having those in-person conversations can be very productive because a lot of the discourse is largely social media driven these days. I mean, people are looking at things they see on the social media application of their choice. The opponents are not actual people. They are just pictures and videos and text, and they don't have that humanity. And then when you get all of the humans together to talk it out respectfully, then there could be progress.
Absolutely. So we have at our libraries book discussions, programs, different themes of programs. For example, I know some libraries had different science and technology series, or looking at healthcare, or looking at, you know, how to live and cope with somebody who has an illness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, those are all wonderful ways to bring community members together to in person have that dialogue. And then also, I just want to note that technology can really help people who can't get physically to the library. So many of our programs post-COVID are also hybrid.
Yeah. And, you know, so that and that is all true. And those discussions can be had and, you know, get resolved in local libraries and community centers, things like that. The feature, just back to what I said a second ago, it takes a turn when that social media, you know, maelstrom that you talked about ends up and some elected official says, you know what, let's pull 850 titles from a library. I don't like them and I don't think anyone should have access to them, like that happened in Texas. So, you know, things like that, that's where it becomes really problematic. And again, the ALA and other groups there's a lot of people, the vast majority of people in this country do not want book bans and censorship. They want freedom to access the information they need and want. So there's always good resources on our website, ala.org. Let's put that in there.
And then speaking of resources, and of course, going back to a media law class from way back when, you know, the guiding principle in a lot of censorship cases is prevailing community standards. And so when we talk about guidance that the ALA gives to libraries, it's one thing to produce the guidance, another thing to be the librarian or the staff of a library in a particular town where you are walking down the streets and you see your neighbors who disapprove of some of the titles in your library. So how can you continue to serve as a community organization and serve taxpayers, while at the same time you're trying to balance the two things, trying to balance, you know, ALA guidelines versus mm-hmm. we have to live here and mm-hmm. are accountable to elected officials.
Yeah. You want to address that? I'm happy to join.
Sure. So the American Library Association, as a place that helps library workers, they help with the American Library Association's Bill of Rights. They do trainings on it. They have coalitions where we work across and help with various communities on, for example, legal help for librarians through the Freedom to Read Foundation is a group that works adjacent to the American Library Association. So there are lots of different supports to help people with people's intellectual freedom rights.
Yeah, and to those community conversations you're talking about, you know, what happens in most cases is that, you know, someone, maybe a legislator or some elected official, wants to go down this road of censorship, and then librarians get involved because they're at the heart of it, and librarians will help explain to the community there is no pornography in the library. Like, we are very careful to guide readers, especially when we talk about children, to like age-appropriate materials. That's what librarians are trained to do. That's what they do every day. And I'm not saying it's easy. Those can be intense or difficult experiences and conversations, but in the main, they work out right, you know, and people begin to say, oh yeah, we don't want to do that. And the essential kind of dynamic is, it's not up to me to decide what your child should read. It's up to you as the parent. There's a great movie coming out. It's actually out now. The Librarians came out last year. It's been on PBS. And that's just a really good example of those kind of community discussions and fraught things where librarians, and again, not easy, and some librarians have really paid a really dear price personally for these sort of attacks, unfortunately, but they're brave people. They're brave defenders of democracy, librarians.
They are. And in like this movie, you see these courageous librarians who really have taken a personal cost to protecting the intellectual freedom rights of individuals. And there are supports out there like the Merit Fund. Mm-hmm. The Merit Fund is a fund that provides resources for people who might have been threatened or lost their job or had a situation where they might need some financial resource support.
Yeah, because of being attacked for intellectual freedom. Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're
yeah.
listening to At Issue on WBBM News Radio. I'm Rob Hart. We are talking with Maria McCauley, the president of the American Library Association, and Dan Montgomery, executive director of the ALA. One of the other mission statements of the American Library Association you talked about earlier in the program is just expanding access and dealing with the digital divide that still exists today. As much as we think connectivity is everywhere, we mentioned before about how the library can be the one place where people connect to the internet on a daily basis. That's the only place where they can go. But now the state of Illinois is investing millions of dollars on programs that are designed to narrow that digital divide. And what are some of the initiatives that the ALA, what's your organization working on?
Yeah, well, I mean, just in Illinois, as you mentioned, the Secretary of State of Illinois, Alexei Janulius, who's also the state's chief librarian, has done a good job in helping to direct some state resources. It's always a tough budget. Illinois is not alone in that around the country, especially these days. But grants for both capital projects and then just the digital divide issue that you're talking about to help libraries do more in terms of connectivity. And that's training we do all year round at the ALA. We have a lot of resources, again, for librarians. At our conference, where we just ended our 150th anniversary celebration, but it's our annual conference we do, 15,000 librarians, librarian workers, and other folks come together. And there's tons of workshops there around things like Maria mentioned, E-rate, right, which is what the money libraries have to pay to get a discount on broadband and connectivity for their communities. And it's a huge cost to libraries. So we have a lot of resources. We're working hard to lobby Congress to keep E-rate. The FCC has proposed doing away with it completely, which would raise costs, I don't know, probably in the hundreds of millions of dollars nationally. Maria, I'm not sure the dollar value. So that's an important thing that we work on.
Yeah, and I just want to emphasize the digital equity tools that our libraries provide for the community and their opportunities through skilled teachers and library professionals around learning tech skills. Mm. And the American Library Association provides resources for digital equity learning for library workers. And another area that's really important too is STEAM learning. Mm. We have many different communities where there are STEM industries, and we want to make sure that people are able to get jobs in the STEM fields. So having trained library workers who can offer and activate spaces like maker spaces and introduce people to design thinking and to also introduce people to the ideas around creative economies. Those kinds of programs are happening throughout our libraries across the United States. And the American Library Association offers learning opportunities and upskilling opportunities for our library workers in those areas. Just a couple of examples.
Now, what are, as we wrap up, what are some of the challenges you think A, libraries, and B, the ALA will face as it approaches year number 151?
Yeah. Well, one thing I will say, this isn't a sort of sexy thing, but our help last year, the Government Accounting Office, the research arm of Congress did a report on the capital needs of libraries, and it's really very huge in terms of building infrastructure and things like that. The average library building is over 40 years old in this country. Just in Illinois alone, there are, I think, over 600, between 600 and 700 library districts in Illinois, and almost 800 actual outlets or branches, and HVAC needs, air conditioning related things, with materials like books and other hard materials in libraries. You can't have a leaky roof, right? You can't have flooding and things like that. So there's a lot of deferred maintenance with budgets, and libraries around the country are often funded locally through, a library board or a county system. Some are private, and states give money to libraries. The federal government gives very little to libraries overall, unfortunately. We'd like to have them give more. But those capital concerns are really important, we need help.
And Maria, you get the last word.
Oh, thank you. So I would say that as a cornerstone of our democracy, I'm very hopeful for our libraries over the next 150 years. I think that it's going to be so exciting to see what happens. And I would ask all Americans to make sure that you have your library card. Go to your local library if you don't have it. That's one way. And I think you'll be really amazed and surprised and filled with wonderment to learn more about your library and the resources and supports that they can provide. And also, please donate to the American Library Association. You can come become a supporter of the library. You do not have to be a library worker yourself.
Maria McCauley, President of the American Library Association, and Executive Director Dan Montgomery, thank you for joining us this week on At Issue. Join us next week for another edition of At Issue. Until then, I'm Rob Hart, News Radio 105.9 WBBM.